One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far, podcast time, and it's with the one and only Duke Dumont. I'm pretty sure most of you, if not all of you, know who Duke Dumont is, so this intro does not have to be telling you who's coming on. Duke has achieved some things that most artists will never achieve in the electronic or in the music industry at all. He has great insight, produces some great records, and is a very good conversationist. I love this. So without further ado, Duke Dumont. And we are live. Duke Dumont, what's cooking, man? How are you?
Good, man. I'm good. I'm drinking my cold cappuccino.
Epic.
I have to have caffeine to start the day.
I'm lucky I haven't ever got to that standard state part of my life where I actually even like coffee. I wish I liked coffee, but I've got
If you don't need it, don't.
I've got so many friends that are just slave to the coffee in the morning, and I'm so happy I'm not.
Yeah, don't saying that though, there's something in caffeine that it does stimulate some kind of neurons or something.
100%. It's a drug. It's a drug.
Really? I'm addicted to it. I have to have a cup of tea, or I literally can't start my day in the studio without having a cup of tea.
Mm. Like, such an English thing, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. But they say that, like, when tea was, like, introduced, tea and coffee was introduced to Europe, it coexisted with the with like the Golden Age or something.
Oh, really? So
like these historians are saying caffeine is the reason why a lot of stuff got done. I'm still. My theory is that tea inspires more musicians than weed. tea gets more stuff more done in the studio than
it probably weed. Does. To be fair, because there's a lot more. I don't drink tea as well. I wish I did. The only tea I drink is bubble tea and Thai tea, and that's just because I'm a child and like sweet things.
You spent too much time in LA.
Or Japan.
Or Japan, yeah. Oh man, I want to go back to Japan. It's been a while.
Same, man. I miss traveling. I really miss going to different cities. Like, I don't know about you, but for me, like, going to it's great doing what we do and like touring America and touring the UK. But with this whole COVID shit, like with everything else being closed down, it's narrowed it down so much for us.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's I feel bad for, as I said to you on the phone, I feel bad for DJs that go in, like, they have to have their paycheck every month, or they have to have their paycheck every 6 months.
Yeah,
I was certainly in that position not so long ago.
Mm.
I'm kind of coming through, so like, I don't feel bad for myself. I don't feel bad for
at all. We're lucky.
Fine, and the only thing they can do is travel. Like, no, I don't feel bad for them, but the people that can at all, and it's like the lack of sympathy from, like, so, like, I mean, again, it's social media, ignore social media, but the lack of sympathy for, like, DJs is like, okay, it's a job for a lot of people.
Mm.
And they might be making an average income and not touring for 18 months. Screw them. And there's a lack of sympathy for that. It's like, what's wrong with you people?
Well,
I have sympathy for, like, for actors. Love doing what they do, can't do anything else in life, and struggle. So, yeah, I hope coming out of, well, if we are coming out of COVID, you know, they find a thing.
I actually think there's more DJs that are in that situation than not, really, because there's so many more DJs trying to become big than that are actually big. So many more.
It's weird. It's an interesting time for music, because it's never been easier to get into music, but it's never been harder to make a career for music.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of coming through, I mean, obviously, I've been doing it as a job since 2006, since I was fired from my job, and I said to myself, okay, in 3 to 6 months, if I don't make as much, and I was on minimum wage anyway, but I don't make as much from DJ, and then I go, and within 3 months, I was making minimum wage. So I never looked back from there. But, you know, even 2012, it was easier to have a career if you was at a certain standard.
Yeah.
Now it's exceptionally hard.
Mm.
The pressure, I think, on new acts in electronic music coming through is this one. And this is one that I was fortunate to not have the pressure of. In order to be successful, you know, this music gets played on playlists and all that malarkey. In order to be successful, you have to make music that generically fits onto those playlists.
Yeah.
But if you're an artist, or you've got an ounce of creativity in your body, or an ounce of style, it might not necessarily fit on those playlists. So I've seen acts go, what the fuck do I do?
Yeah.
Do I listen to my heart, or do I listen to my head? So that pressure they put on themselves. And so that is, I would say, something that's only existed for the last, it's always existed, but very prominently for the last 6 years, 7 years. And I think it's the pressure on new acts. I think it's pressure on all acts, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm fortunate enough where I'm oddly more free now than I was when I started. So,
but I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that's because you've kind of put the foundations down, right? Things have grown for you to the level where, and you still have to work hard, but, and you still have to make good music, which you do, but at the end of the day is like, people, you have a core fan base, which for me personally is the hard, I believe building a core fan base is the hardest thing. But once you've got that core fan base, you can build from that. And you're always going to have, like, there's always, whether your core fan base is 10 people, whether your core fan base is 2,000 people, 100,000 people, you can always grow from that, unless you do something stupid where they all fuck you off. Like, there's still going to be people that like you. And I think what's happened with you is, tell me if I'm wrong, is that you've grown a very strong core fan base, and now you're allowed to kind of do more so what you want rather than what has to be done to kind of get bigger, to get number ones, to do all of that.
I've had 12 years to ruminate over this and think about this. And number one, you're 100% right regarding fan bases.
Yeah.
It's not always about how many streams you get.
No.
It's about your fan base. And because the reality is I've seen acts sell stadiums mm-hmm. with a lot less listens and plays than people that have top 50 in the world songs.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that's right. Some people don't like tour and some people don't want to tour.
Yeah.
Not all people that make, this is like a big myth, not all people that make electronic music are touring acts.
No.
You don't have to be a DJ to make electronic music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, still appreciate the album. So to go back what you mentioned about live fan bases. So, yeah, number one, it's not necessarily about the streams. I honestly think the most important thing in music is to make music that has some kind of emotional impact on yourself totally. And just watch that it does on other people.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to realise that.
Mm.
So it's like, okay, you know, when you're in the studio, that first 45 minutes you're working on something, you're like, oh shit, this is good.
Yeah.
And you know, the trajectory of a producer or a creator in any art, whether it's film, painting, music, or whatever, trajectory is like the first hour, oh, this is the best thing ever, this is great. And then it goes, oh, this is shit.
Mm.
But if you can hold that energy you have in that first hour from the impact, then that's the impact it's going to have on the or people listening to it for totally. The first time.
Totally.
And just make music that makes people dance, make music that makes people happy, make music that makes people sad.
Yeah.
The whole point is this is fucking art. Do something.
Mm.
That's, you know, you don't be political. Don't be political. If you don't political, have some kind of, like, you know, there's, you know, some great electronic acts, you know, they're not political, but make great music. There's great acts who make awful music, but political, great acts. Do something that's, what's yeah. in you, you know, what my music you would want to listen to, number one. Number two, if just go with that sheer emotive quality. And that's, I kind of see, oh, I'm going to sound like a bitch now, but it's true.
It's fine, you are.
I see a lot of club music is so generic.
Oh, man.
Out of safety, not yeah. out of emotion. There's no, it's so weird. I came through during like the block house days.
Mm.
And by 2006, 2008, and it was a weird ending of like rock, electro clash mm. rock show, you know, like guitarist with a 999, and guitarist yeah. with a 303. And it's really good music around that time. And there's all these risks being taken.
Yeah.
Nobody, and it was just like, it wasn't, it was just a mess. Mm. Like, it's so disorganized, but it was so free at the same time. Like, yeah. some of the parties used to play in Paris, and like London was the craziest party still to this day. And then it got, like, everything gets from it. And yeah, the funny thing with club music is just, there's this safety in it. And there's a safety because, and it's the same with playlists, the same with everything. Go safe in order to make money.
It's
the reality, you roll the dice and take yeah. a bigger risk. You either make you're either doing much better or you're gonna do like much better.
I think so, yeah. I think for me the description of what you're kind of saying is be punk as fuck. Those
no, just be you. Just be you. Some people are punk. Now, some people that are punk are like doing it because they're really bad at what they do. It's the only way they can get attention.
But it works for them.
Are geniuses and yeah. like borderline autistic and you know focus on things much more than other people can. Like myself, I'm on the freaking spectrum at the best of times. And then there's other people just like listening to granular pad music and ambient music. It's, yeah. like, it's not like oh yeah, you know, fuck the system. No, it's not about that. Just do you, but don't have a fear of doing you.
Yeah,
like I still to this day remember in 2008, I was making about £10,000 a year, £8,000 a year.
Yeah,
for about 2 or 3 years, and I went, I kind of I kind of know what I'm doing. Maybe I should try and make some EDM. And I remember trying to make some EDM because I was just so desperate to pay the bills. And all I wanted to do was make a living from music because it was a good fucking job to do. Like, for someone who used to work in an office, I appreciate sitting in front of a couple of speakers. And even now, desperation, even when it was a case of not doing music that I really liked. And I did like two or three demos, and it was dog shit, absolute dog shit. And it made me, because I used to I used to be such a little bitch. Like, I used to moan about commercial dance act and be like, I could do what they do. I could do what they do. And the reality is I couldn't. And the reality is, well, if you can do what they do, well, do it. Do it. Stop being a little bitch. Do it. And I tried, and I couldn't make it. I was like, it just wasn't in my soul. And then after like years of like just like making no money, I made a song called The Giver, which kind of came from the heart. Around that time, there wasn't like a genre it really fitted into. It just had a little bit of emotion and had that staple foundations of what I consider to be house music. It had soul to it. And it had, I can't remember, 707 or 909 kind of rimshot sample, and it just like consolidated it all. And that came from the heart. That song wasn't about trying to make a living. And it, that was the thing, that was the record that went, it put me back on that radar slightly. So the record, The Giver, weirdly teed up a song like Need You, because it put me back in the ecosystem of music being played.
See, the thing for me is when I heard The Giver, I was like, "Who?" Because I didn't know who you were before. And I think that record made me know who you are and kind of be like, oh, damn, let me check this dude out, because this record slams in a club, and it was a proper DJ's record.
And I think that's what everybody has to fight to, is to still make records, regardless of where they still have an impact. So whether it's you don't know who the name is, you're just like, oh, sure, that's a good record. I think that should be the aim of any DJ, is to make records that have the biggest reaction in your DJ set. And that's not by getting on the mic and going, this is my brand new song. Like, fuck that. Sit in the wings, see how it works. I remember when I played Power for the first time. I played it in Australia, and I was like, oh shit, this reaction is strong. And they do not know the record. But they're acting like they do know the record. I remember when I played Red Light, Green Light, I played it in America, and it bombed so hard. It like, no one, because it's kind of like, the weird thing about it is tech house, but it's not tech house. So it doesn't have the traditional elements to the drum. The drums are a bit groovier, so it clashes a bit with tech house records. It bombed in the US, but I remember going to Australia, and the reaction was unbelievable. This is before people knew what the record was. This is before, you know, I filmed a video with Sean, and it was just purely the reaction. Make those records. Like, if you are a DJ, make those records that have it, try them out. You know, even if you make 2 minutes of a song, try it out on a DJ set. You know, and that's the best. I'll be honest with you, with quarantine, I sucked at making club music. I did All Rico with Chama Trace. Trace did a great job, and it's, the idea of the song is like a good song, but the balance of where the bass kick is, and I'm not even sure there's a sub in the record. With that balance, I lost connection. I lost that. Now I've been DJing last 2 or 3 months again. It's like, oh, it's kicked in. It's like, okay, I know where this sits. And it's just so funny that I kind of lost that, what works in a club environment. But at the same time, speaking about club music, my passion isn't, I mean, I love club music, but my passion isn't solely in club music. My goal was just to make, like I said at the start, music that has some kind of emotion, quality to it. You know, it's like when I watch a film, I want to be made to feel something.
Yeah, but so, I guess, like, have you always done that in your music, or has it now got to the point where you're doing, where you feel like you're doing that? Because with like the Duality record album, that felt like you were doing that. It felt like this is like a listening album, that there's some records in there that are really club based, but there's also some records in there that aren't.
Duality album for me, here's the weird thing with music. The Duality album, it's like, I saw someone do a tweet the other day and said, never do an album, just, you know, just do singles. You know, it goes against business. And they're right and they're wrong. Okay, they're right in the sense that the amount of work you do in the studio is more efficient if you just do fucking club bangers, yeah. Okay? But if you're on, if you have an ounce of artistry in your DNA, and you have an appreciation of like music, and it's not so business, do an album, man. Because that's like, if you could do an album where people do connect and you connect with it, that's actually oddly better in the long run. Like, you know, when I'm listening to music, like every so often, like once a year, there'll be like two or three acts where I'm like, oh my God, they're so fucking good.
Yeah.
But this, like, they're scarily good, inspires me to get better.
Yeah.
And all those acts in electronic music are all album acts.
Yeah.
So whether it's an act like The Blaze.
Oh, they're so good.
But it's emotive music. Yeah. I mean, it's the most stripped back house music you can imagine. But there's something else going. I love music where there's so few elements, it's so simple, but there's something else going on which you can't put your finger on.
Yeah.
Remember listening to Flying Lotus for the first time? Flying Lotus isn't simple music, but listening to the Los Angeles album, I'd be like, how does he do that?
Yeah.
What's he doing? You know, what compressions is he using? How's he doing this? And that leads me to like do it, you know, a deep dive on how he does it. And now I have like the same limit set in the Flying Lotus, even though no one could tell.
Yeah.
Just purely because the thing with like producers and creators and any artist, we're all magpies.
Mm-hmm.
We're all kind of looking for that little bit of gold somewhere.
Yeah.
Even if it could be a limit set. It's like, okay, great, boom.
Yeah.
And that's part of the game. I mean, I remember, you know, not being able to like buy, it's different now. I buy all my software. So, you know, I do all my software. I legitimately, but I wouldn't use any crack software. But even 2006, you know, going on the web and on Russian torrent sites and being like, oh, great.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I bought was Ableton, like legit, and everything else was, you know, pirated. And just like, but because if I didn't do that, I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a case of like, I was being cheap. It's like, no, I can't afford it. But it's like, I'm not going to let anything get in my way. And as artists, like, yeah, it's everybody's magpies. And that's not necessarily a bad term. It's because something has an impact on you. And all you want is that for you to create something to have an impact on
somebody else. Yeah. And I think becoming an album artist actually allows you to be fully creative on how you want to be. Whereas singles don't allow that. It's in our kind of genre to a certain extent in dance music, because the single has to hit a certain level. Like for me, like going back to Justin Martin's Ghettos and Gardens album, quite possibly for me personally, one of the best albums in dance music over the last like 10 years. That solidified his career into being an album artist. And although he releases singles and everything like that, but waiting for that album as a fan, although he's a good friend of mine, but it's like as a fan, I'm always waiting for that album because I think it's really special. Whereas when you're a single artist, which I am at this moment in time, just a single artist, it's like, oh, here's another Will Clark single. There's kind of like not a bigger thing to talk about.
So here's to completely go counter what we're speaking about, because the reality is there's no good and bad. There's no one's better than the other. There's no like black or white. It's just varying degrees of grey, which is the opposite of duality. The reality is I actually don't believe in duality, which is it is Seneca, which you demand. But duality was done because it was to show like, okay, no way, you got songs like Red Light, Green Light, and then there's a song with Ryex that is like an 8-minute passage of music. So what you're speaking about with singles is, I find as singles can buy like moments in time. And also I think as an act, so, you know, I flee from one year to the next. Am I going to do an album? Am I going to do just release singles? You know, like Beatport, club records, and it all comes down to where your head's at and what's to inspire in you. And you just got to go with that energy. But the thing is, with the power of a single, like if it wasn't for the power of a single, I wouldn't be living in this house. I wouldn't have a career.
Totally.
I would be back living with my mom in England, right? Because of the power of a single.
Yeah.
There is, but once, if acts achieve that, is what they do with it next.
Yeah.
And I remember with having the UK number one, and people were like, when's the next one coming out? When's the next one coming out? What are you doing next? When's the next number one coming out? It's like, motherfucker. Do you think this, you know, this comes with like cornflakes? You get on the ball, like, you think it's like okay, I just decided to make music one day.
Yeah.
And next week, you know, no, it's a whole, it's perseverance and luck.
Yeah.
Perseverance and being good at what you do, having perseverance. Like the other thing as well is having a number one song in the charts doesn't necessarily mean like it's a good song.
Yeah.
Like it's a good radio song.
Yeah.
There's different, where music is consumed, where music is listened to is so important. So if there's a song on radio, there's no secret to it. Make a feel good, dancey.
Yeah.
Record if you want to, but that's if it's in your spirit and in your soul. At that point in time with Need You, that was kind of in my DNA. It's like, you know, that's where my head was at.
Yeah.
And I did the backing trap, Amy and M&EK did the vocals and the top line, and it was two different worlds come together, and I actually oddly worked in a, even though it's a completely different song to Adamski and Seal. But, you know, that song is two worlds coming together. And in dance music, when those two worlds come together,
it works.
It can work a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So talking about the power of releasing singles, having that, and everyone's like, when's the next one? When's the next one? I said, shut the fuck up. I was too busy touring. Anyway, the next one I got, you went to number one as well.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, okay, cool. And that's when it starts to enter the world of morning radio DJ type thing. Like, I was not comfortable.
Yeah.
I played that game in the UK a little bit, not a lot, a little bit. I was deeply uncomfortable. I'm like, I am not a celebrity.
Yeah.
I do not take care of my appearance. I do not really care. I do not even exercise. All I do is program. I am not a celebrity. I don't have a publicist.
Yeah.
This is not the world. I love dance music and I like making dance music.
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest thing. I remember being at the Brits and my the woman that was the lady that was supposed to show me where to left me for dead on the red carpet to go and converse with some celebrity. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? This is not shit. And then anyway, so I had that. So I'm like the most successful non-famous chart, I think, probably in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then there's a few records, and then Ocean Drive came along.
Mm.
Ocean Drive was buried in the UK.
Yeah.
Buried because there's a disagreement with radio and labels, especially Universal, about streaming, radio exclusivity, and all that. Nothing to do with me. Their politics and their games they all play, where the creators end up being the ones to get affected.
Yeah.
There's some war going on between them, and it just got buried in the UK. Ocean Drive didn't even get into the top 40.
Did it not?
Did not even get into the top 40. Ocean Drive was the reason why I had to leave the UK, because it was so big around the rest of the world.
Yeah.
In Australia, it was the second or third most played song on radio that year.
Damn.
The only other two were Bieber and Adele. And this is a guy who has no publicist.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the guy you do not see on the merit of the fucking song.
Yeah.
Okay. It went top 40 on US radio. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but to go top 40 in US radio is a bigger deal than having number one songs.
Yeah, you don't, people don't realize how hard it is to get in top 40 in the USA. It's hard and costs money.
To do it and not be famous as well.
Yeah.
It's hard. So off the merit of the song, it got buried. Absolute hatchet job. And fuck knows why. Fuck knows why. And people that were involved and did that need to look at themselves. Because it's sadly like the accountants and the paper pushers are the ones that can just bury it. You know, they just, just put us out of posture. It's like, yeah. What's wrong? And it's when... That's the beauty of music, is it was still in a system, still in the ecosystem, and still available. Even 2, 3, 4 years down the line, people can listen back to some music and be like, oh, wow, that still sounds good. And it's like, listen to it again and again. And that connection between creator and consumer in art is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Everything in the world is just dirty. It's so bad. But the dirtiness can also build careers.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. It's just creative purity, impact it has on listener is pure. Everything in the middle is just dog shit.
But I also think at the end of the day, if you write a good record and it is genuinely a very good record, it will have a life of some sort. And it will... I think it will always eventually come around. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's going to give you success, but a record that is very well done and it has an impact in some sort of way, it will come around.
If it's given an ounce of an opportunity at the start, because there's great artists and there's great records that just do not get heard.
Yeah.
And then there's really bad records, in my opinion, and that's just my opinion. It's like, it's a good record to someone. There's records I perceive as being bad records that get all the attention in the world.
Do you think this is like a major record label issue, though?
I mean, major labels control the entire distribution stream.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the one like, I mean, well, more or less, I mean, like to go back and imagine as like, you know, The Blaze or someone like Jamie XX or someone on Ninja Tune, like there's another level to it where that model is so fan based, like they really make music that connects with people and you can do well with that, but outside of that, it's a close shop. I think if you're an album act, it's good to work with a label that allows you to do albums. Major label system. It's a shame they do not want electronic albums.
Yeah.
They do not want electronic albums. They do not want... There might be an A&R somewhere, a label that does, but then they also are going to get fired if they don't deliver a certain X amount of streams. It's like, you know, people, a lot of people work at labels are music fans, but the constraints put on them kind of over time stops them become music fans, and it becomes facts and figures. So, but yeah, no, the major label distribution streams is it's one stop shop.
But it can't. Yeah. But it also, on a positive note, it can make people's careers. And
100%. I wouldn't have a career if it wasn't singles.
Yeah.
Duality for me was like doing an album was like the perfect timing for me, because it's like I know I'm confident in knowing what I want to do.
Yeah.
I have the peace of mind. I don't have to make top 40 pop records.
Yeah.
I love making music. I love doing aspects of what I do. And even if every song's not the biggest, the best song in the world, so be it. And make it into a body of music.
Yeah.
It is perfect. I almost did an album in 2014, 2013.
Yeah.
It would have been awful.
Yeah.
Would have been.
Was Duality your first album?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I mean, I more or less had another album that was due to release, and there's complications to that.
Yeah.
But I was happy it didn't happen, because it would have been chasing coattails of successful commercial electronic acts at that time.
Yeah.
By Disclosure.
Yeah.
So, you know, Disclosure are Disclosure because they sound like Disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they have their fingerprint on what they do.
Especially their first album. Their first album was special.
Super special.
I think second album kind of was interesting. It felt like this is a major record label pushing it, if I'm honest.
They did the big features, you know, a lot of money spent on those and stuff, but top of the pyramid is always the music.
Yeah.
Top of the pyramid is the quality of the music. As a music fan, I love to hear them do one or two things just completely outside the box of what they do, or their comfort zone, whether it's like a fucking art bat type techno record or just an out and out disco record. Because I remember hearing them they did like a record with, I've forgotten his name, a rapper. It was on SoundCloud. And it was like, I don't know, about 105 BPM. It was so good. It was so, so good. Even the record they did with Khalid, Talk.
Yeah.
Like,
that was a great record. Yeah.
Fantastic pop record.
Yeah, that was great.
That's like, they had the ability to make some of the best pop music. And that's not like a slur, but the ability to make interesting pop music is the hardest, probably one of the hardest things as a record producer to be able to do.
Mm.
To make interesting pop music, to make generic pop music. It's so easy.
Well, it's so formulaic, isn't it, now, especially nowadays? Like, generic dance pop music is so formulaic. Just listen to the charts half the time. It's
a system. It's formulaic for the following reasons. Because there's comfort and familiarity.
Mm.
Right? So in the human psyche, there's comfort in things you're familiar with. It's just the way human brains are set up. So when the songs are played on radio, people listen to it for comfort. They listen to it on the way to work, on the way back from work.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm speaking about this like people listen to fucking radio now. I'm not sure they do. But if they do, and a lot of people do, I guess, like it's on the way back from work, most people don't want to be challenged by some weird song.
Yeah.
So the ability to have a successful commercial record that is unique or interesting is as hard as making an instrumental club record that still sounds good five or six, seven line. Those two things, an instrumental club record that keeps people's attention and still sounds good 10 years later, and interesting pop music are, like, to me, the hardest things to do in music. But so hard. So yeah, when Disclosure did Talk, I was like, oh wow, that's such a well-crafted record. So yeah, I'm going back, kind of regressing a little bit. I was happy I didn't do an album at the time because it would have felt like chasing coattails a little bit of them.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, I don't know, I just didn't feel it was ready. Because Duality, it feels like me. It feels like the type of music,
yeah,
you know, that I listen to, like, you know, Let Me Go with YX.
Yeah, yeah. Mate, just to butt in, is there people in the background?
There is, yeah. So I'm going to go to another room.
Because it's coming through. Sorry, man.
Everyone's being super loud. Loud. I'm going to try and go to another room and it might be a little bit noisy.
It's all good, man. I just want people to be able to not get distracted by it.
Should be a bit quiet.
Yeah, that's much better. Yeah, I guess that's it. It's the timing is key in a lot of it, right? Is that you have to be ready in your artist career to kind of take that leap.
You can easily overthink it regarding timing and like cultural timing, yes. What's popular, what's not popular. But again, it does come down to a bit of luck. It's just like you can't really align. Like when I did Need You, there is no piano house music on radio.
Yeah.
No. It was the first piano house record for close to 18 to 20 years to get number one in the UK.
Yeah.
And then look at UK radio now.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason, like, it was a unique. Here's the thing: I didn't invent anything. I don't confess to like.
Yeah.
When I did not invent a show, like, at all. I'm inspired by it. So it was that record was familiar, but different enough to prick people's ears up.
Yeah, yeah.
Disclosure did the same.
Yeah.
Totally. So the UK is obviously so ingrained with garage music.
Mm.
So it wasn't really, what they were doing wasn't so alien from a lot of the garage shows. They put their spin on it and they did their own thing.
And they did it very well.
They did it very well. But I listened to like some popular records and dance records in the UK now. And it's just like, does it lack that character?
Yeah.
It sounds too safe. It sounds like, I don't know, like, what make my ears pick up? Probably someone making fantastic John Mayer. I don't know. It wasn't, I would say, like, what myself, MK, at that time, Disclosure, Rue 94, Chris Manichek, all these people that had success. Dance music success at the time, it wasn't calculated. Mm. It was just like, well, we've been doing this for like 5-10 years before.
It just worked.
It just happened to be at that cross section in culture.
Totally.
What happened as well is, it was during the time, there was a big recession around that time.
Mm.
People started going out again.
Yeah.
Because people started wanting to go out again and dance. It was the perfect timing. People were Shazamming our records all the time. Mm. So you could be in a bar or a club up in Liverpool or Newcastle. People are like, oh, what's this song? Shazam.
Yeah.
And that really led, I'd say, us all were part of that Shazam generation.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing as well, is platforms and technology always always shape.
Mm.
A lot of the things, like, you know, we speak about Spotify playlists. The reason why music is, you know, M1 piano or vocal is because it favors Spotify playlists.
Yeah.
So the apps though on there might not necessarily be like, okay, I'm going to make a record for this, and it's all calculated and all that. It's just that's them, but they will get more attention than an app like Tone of Us or Artbat or something like that. Even though they do okay, they won't go into that system. Even though they're making some of the most interesting kind of post-trance music, you know, around. So I call it, they'll probably be upset and say post-trance, but it has that similar euphoria to listening to, you know, huge tunes record back in like 1998 or something like that. So yeah, it's, you know, there's great music. There's always great music. It's just harder to hear it now.
Well, I think that's the thing is also is in, let's use, for instance, like Tale of Us or Outback for an example, is that it goes back to what we were saying at the very beginning of this conversation, where it's down to growing a core fan base. And your core fan base doesn't have to be on Spotify. It doesn't have to be people that listen to the radio. It can be anything. And those guys and girls that produce that type of music have a core fan base in clubs and that like raving and that go to raves. And even for me, if you know what I mean, my music doesn't necessarily correlate on Spotify or streaming. Like, my biggest stream is like 7 million, I think, which in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot when you compare it to a lot of big commercial dance records. But in the underground, it's still looked at as okay. But we all have a core fan base in the club, which is where it started. And I think that's why these people, or they have associations. I think we forget that associations are so powerful in this industry, especially now. Being part of a crew is the biggest thing to be in this industry right now.
That's been my biggest weakness. Is like I'm fairly antisocial. I don't hang out with DJs. I just live a simple life.
Yeah.
I think at a certain level, you're 100% right. I think on the Resonate Advisor tip, it's very clicky. Yeah. It's very, very, very clicky.
Yeah.
You know, there's great electronic records, but, you know, in the smallest clubs or wherever. I think there gets a point where when acts start from club, the club can almost be a shackle to what they do. Mm. Sometimes you kind of shake that shackle, they kind of find your true artistry, because the reality of what we do is our touring life is relying upon clubs.
Yeah.
Right? My philosophy is, don't DJ if you don't contribute to the DJ world. Because the culture of, there's something weird about going to a venue, going to a festival, playing well for people's music and being paid for it.
Yeah.
Okay, there's, I do that. I mean, I play a lot of my own music. I do that. It's a bit odd. Like, why? So the people's music you play is a huge, huge component to that event. And I get away with it by buying a record from Beeple.
Yeah.
And there's pennies given on PPL or whatever.
Nothing. It's
wrong about that. So holistically, if you're speaking holistically, and I'm a hypocrite, by the way, so I'm not acting like holier than holy. If you are in that world, surely you have to contribute to that world.
Yeah.
So surely you have to make records that other people are playing. But that forces everybody to make records that other DJs could play and stuff like that. I think it's someone, you shouldn't, like, the shackle is that clubs and some like type festivals.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You know, it's relying on that system. For me, I kind of had two problems to what I do now. I had the DJ stuff, then the live stuff. I'm in my element when I go and play the Shrine, or I go to, I go to, you know, to Brooklyn, and I, you know, and I get to do like 90 minutes on my live show.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, that's my opinion. I hit my pinnacle artistically like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
To be able to do 90 minute live performance, nail the aesthetic, the music and all of that, and just that's me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it's tough to be able to do that. Because we kind of have that, okay, well, we, most of us make money purely from DJing, so it restricts people. The only reason I don't have that restriction at the moment is because I had success in that world.
Yeah.
It already limits a lot of acts to purely make club music.
Well, I think it goes back to that, that then that turns back around into that single life, doesn't it? Is that, like, you need DJs to play your music because you want to get booked at the end of the day. You want a record to be played out, and you, and by having a record that gets played out by lots of other DJs, then pricks up the ears of promoters, agents, managers, and it kind of, it's kind of that circle, right? But I think and tell me if you don't agree with me, but with your career, you had like The Giver, which was that DJ record. And then I don't know what came in between that and your first number one, but was your
nothing. I procrastinated for about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I literally had paralysis from analysis.
Yeah.
Before The Giver, there was just nothing. So I did like a few records on Turbo.
Yeah.
Turbo Recordings. That's how I kind of started.
Yeah.
And, paralysis from analysis for about 3 or 4 years. I didn't release a record because I was so concerned that it had been such a long time that I had to make a record that changed the world.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's not going to happen.
It's the worst pressure ever.
Where it's like, oh, your next record has to be a fucking great record. Otherwise, it's like, it become, and honestly, that way of thinking was the most destructive thing any artist can go through.
Oh my god, dude, I can relate to that massively. My first big record was a track called Big Booty, and everyone was playing it at the time.
Dirty Bird.
I'm sorry?
Was that on Dirty Bird or?
No, it was on Anabatic, which is Worthy's record label, or used to be Worthy's record label. I don't think she runs it anymore. But it was before my Dirty Bird days. And but everyone was playing it from like, this was when like Seth was coming through, is when Eats was coming through, when MK just kind of hit through. Jamie Jones was obviously like the biggest person in the world, and they were all playing it. And they were like, and I was like, fuck, I need to make music that fits in with them now. Completely forgetting that the music that I've just written that I absolutely love fits their DJ sets, and it works, and they're playing my music. It was so like demoralizing, to the point where I just stopped writing music for 6 months and tried to open a club, because it was just like, fuck this.
Yeah, it's like the pressure is unbelievable. At a certain stage, it's always like, and this is why it's the most negative mindset to be in. That the acts I see being very successful are acts that don't dip below a certain level.
Yeah.
So they have a benchmark. Sorry about all the...
It's fine, don't worry. It's fine. It sounds fine. Sounds fine.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
They don't dip below a certain benchmark, but they just release and release and release and release and feed the beast into the system.
Yeah.
Just feed it and feed it and feed it. The most successful acts as well don't... There has to be a point in any artist's trajectory that they shouldn't be reliant on other people playing their music.
Yeah.
So the most impactful point of playing their music is when they play their music.
Yeah.
That, but in order to get to that stage, is you become reliant on other people. So it's like, if someone's making money from you, you only make money if someone else is making money from you.
Yeah.
And on a micro level, that's kind of relying on like DJing as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you take the S-House, or is that how you pronounce it? S-House or South, or whatever, the Australian fellas.
Okay.
You know, Love Tonight.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know that record.
You fucking me?
No, I don't.
You don't know that Love Tonight record?
No, is it new?
You don't know that record?
No, I don't.
It's a record in the fucking world for like during COVID. Like other DJs capitalized on it more than they did.
Yeah.
But that's part of the system. That's part of the way it was. And then it's like, okay, you just bring all the attention to you and you don't know that record?
No.
Am I saying it wrong? Is it Love Tonight?
Let me check it out. I guarantee you
will know that record.
S House, is it called?
S House. Is it Love Tonight? I think that's the title. Vintage Culture.
Oh, yeah. I do know that. Yeah, yeah.
And that's the perfect thing of why I'm saying that. Does that come back to them, or does that go back to everybody that had a firewall moment when they played that record?
Yeah.
But I played the Vintage Culture remix. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, yeah, and it, I don't know, it's a tough one. You kind of need to feed the beast, but there comes a point where it all has to come back to you at some point.
Yeah.
And the thing, there's no game plan, there's no, like, blueprint to how it has done. It's just keep pushing. Just keep on moving on, just keep on, you know, creating.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, like, nowadays, to change the subject a little bit, there's so many distractions for creators or artists that it's so... I find it so much harder now than 2010 to make music, because I'm on my fucking phone.
Yeah,
I have this, I have comforts, I have this, whereas I didn't have that before. My studio laptop wasn't even on the internet.
Yeah.
It was mainly pirated software, but it's like, there was no distraction. It's like...
I think that's also the thing that I'm struggling with at this moment in time, is the distractions. It's for me, I don't know if you can relate to this, but it's not even that your phone's there or you got the internet. It's like everything else you have to do is in your career, as an artist, like social media, like for me doing this podcast, like it's my fault that I do all these extra things, because I do it because I enjoy it. But I think it's, by the amount some of us do, it can distract away from music.
To be honest with you, the most successful people, or some of the most successful people I've seen in dance music, electronic music, do many things.
Yeah.
So whether that's Pete Tong.
Yeah.
Whether that's, you know, there's like a lot of producer type guys I know, like Frank, who does Howling with Riot. He's a producer. He runs a festival.
Yeah.
He produces for other acts, like Who Made Who. He does this, he does this, he does this. And they have success. You know? Yeah. They're not Tiesto. They don't want to be Tiesto.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Tiesto.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Tiesto's Tiesto because that's in his DNA, that's what he does. So by spinning those plates, I hear you. It's like this. It's not a bad thing, but it is if it takes away from the most important thing, and that's music. So for me, like, you know, the place I've been on a business level,
yeah,
is I literally have a production company that creates concert visuals. You know, we put an arena show together for myself.
Yeah.
You know, during lockdown and quarantine, it's like all my energy went into that company to roll out for myself, but I can roll out. But you know, Billie Eilish's manager called me tomorrow and was like, can you put on the show, coach Jennifer for Billie Eilish? We can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing well. So that, but that was partly locked into going to Australia next year and playing arenas.
Yeah.
Going to the Shrine and doing that. But what got me there,
yeah,
is the music.
Totally, so, totally. Yeah. I think that's the thing, is the music can help finance do other things, right? And whatever your passion is, you can then do that from if the music is very successful. However, on the kind of side to that is there's a lot of musicians that are extremely successful in business or something like that and not as successful in music, but don't rely on music to be their income.
Yeah, I know that. I know it's quite funny. There's a few acts I know who are like multi-millionaires through business. And a successful electronic act.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have like a clothing company. I'm not going to mention names, but I have a clothing company or something like that. And it's like, wow, that's your company?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's like, where the fuck do you get time to? Like, you know, rest in peace, Virgil Abloh. And stuff like that.
Exactly.
Like, dude's never off his fucking iPhone or his, you know, laptop just tore in the fucking world. The world was his office. His hotel room was his office. And he just like, he just hustled, man. And it's, and it, you know, like everyone's posting text messages, you know, lessons on like conversation. Everybody spoke to Virgil, and that energy is, it goes beyond music. That's like this 21st century entrepreneur.
Totally.
Like energy to have. And yeah, I've seen like some really successful people who not aren't household names, they're not. People wouldn't even consider them in the top 10 of a subgenre, but absolute bosses of what they do.
Yeah.
I think like one of the guys from Dusky is like that, you know, has a hugely successful clothes company, but they're making fantastic music and just doing what they want to do. So yeah, it's so, you know, kind of spinning the place isn't a bad thing, but it is a bad thing. It was taken away from what feeds everything else.
Brings it all together. Yeah, totally. How important to you is having a good team around you?
The reality of like any act, any artist is, I mean, for what we do, we have two jobs: make music, play music. Okay. When that starts to become diluted, that's when those aspects become diluted, the ability to make or play music.
Yeah.
It's your team, theoretically, should do everything outside of playing and making music.
Yeah.
It never works like that.
It never is as well.
There's no perfects. That never... There's very few people where that happens to, probably Justin Bieber. And One Direction.
Yeah.
And they don't make the music. Yeah. But they perform the music.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that level, you know, I've actually seen, like, during the kind of pop days in the UK, I saw a little bit of that world, and it's interesting.
Mm.
Never works. So that's an idol. So team, your team management or whoever should provide that entire thing, where the artist has the vision, make and play music. But it doesn't work like that. So the reason why it doesn't work like that is we're in a world now with social media where, and it's kind of, I completely hate this and disagree with it, but it's the reality of the world. Perception is everything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How you're perceived, how your brand is, you know, down to your artwork, down to the photos you put in on social media, all of this stuff, it's like perception is everything.
Yeah.
And it's sad. So in order to control your perception, that has to kind of come from you a little bit. But my social media is not personable at all.
Yeah.
But that's partly because I don't really want to impart a full sense of confidence upon people. This is how we should be. This is it. Yeah. You know, everybody needs to do this and don't do this. The state of the art, but no, fuck that.
Yeah.
Who am I to tell people how to think, what to think? I see it like so often. And that clout chasing thing, I've seen a lot of acts. Yeah, there's that whole thing. And the sad thing is it works.
Yeah.
It worked. Maybe I'm the idiot for not doing that clout chasing thing and, you know, and just like, but it's negative. I don't like it. The whole social media thing is like, oh, you know, you're not a big act until you post your photo in your private jet and all that.
Fucking hate that.
But yeah, I've done it. I've done it because of that. People buy into it.
Yeah.
People buy into it. And it's like, well, if you don't do that, then, you know, you're not considered a big deal. And it's the weirdest, culture. It's very materialistic. It's very, but at the same time, if people, it's not so much, and this is actually nothing to do with fans. It's everything in the middle that I spoke about. That's what I consider to be the dirty part of the creative process. It's everything in the middle.
Yeah.
Like I've seen acts turn up to places and get so much more money than they should because promoters think they're a big deal. Because of social media.
Yeah.
The, you know, if you want to challenge that, get that act to do a show where it's a ticketed show.
Yeah.
Don't hide on the top line of festivals. Don't bury yourself. You know, a lot of acts will not do concerts because they can't sell tickets, but will headline a festival.
Yeah, yeah.
That's bullshit. Yeah. What is wrong with people booking the acts? And everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, same names, and it's like, it's, you know, culture's not really moving. That's the reason why.
Yeah.
You know, like, some people in the middle need to take a bit of a fucking risk sometimes. Mm-hmm. Look at facts and figures.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, we've got to get this person because they're headline acts. They're not headline acts. They do not draw people. And it seems like they draw people because the festival's so big.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and that's all down to what I said before, perception. Perception management.
Yeah.
And it's the reality of the world we live in, which is a sad state of affairs, but it's really bad to not be aware of it. I remember fantastic electronic acts who never subscribed to Twitter, who never subscribed to social media. And these are some of the most creative people in music. And because they don't have a fucking social media,
no one knows about them.
Business. Now, what? How's that work? You have to have social media in order to be a successful musician. But you take like that, someone like Roman Flugel, for example. Right? Genius of what he does.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not on a private jet. He's not, you know, doing the, you know, a daily blog of, you know, playing, you know,
what's going on in your life.
Stuff just because of that.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing. But it's just, but it's interesting. You know, because it's weird doesn't mean it's wrong.
Mm.
This is just my personal opinion of social media. It's just the, I don't see it as being part of music.
Mm.
I don't see it. I mean, letting people know. It's the funniest thing with social media is, and every act has this, and that is, you put like an announcement for a new single or a new album, and it gets like a quarter of the likes of you, being on a private jet, taking a photo with your dog.
100%.
It's like, I don't even believe this shit. Like, why is the and that is because I think the ability to make music is so undervalued. I think A lot of general pod don't realise how hard it is to get good at Korean, whether it's film, TV.
And I also think a lot of it is about fucking social media algorithms that want you to pay. If you're trying to promote something, they want you to pay for that, and they want you to spend money to promote that. Because I generally think if there's something that the fans really give a fuck about, they will get behind.
100%.
But there comes a point when algorithms get in the way of fans even seeing what you're talking about. Say, for instance, like I say that a new single's coming out and just put the artwork up. Because it's just an artwork and it's got some writing on, the algorithm just doesn't let it go through, and they want you to advertise it and spend money on that. But then you put a video of you playing that record and go, this is coming out soon, everyone loves it and talks about it. It's fucked.
This is the thing, we're in this world of algorithms now, and the world is heading into a world that is completely AI orientated. You know, like even my even when I do fantasy football, I kind of cheat and I use this website called Fantasy Football Fix, which tells me what team I should play. It takes all the information. It's basically Moneyball, but for fantasy football.
Doesn't that take the fun out of it?
I love it. Here's the thing. The reason why I talk about why I mentioned about big acts hiding in festivals and not doing the concerts is because I love looking at all the... The reason why I understand music, the reason why I understand it is because I see the patterns. I see the... You know, it sounded a little bit like Rain Man here, but you mentioned, like, commercial records. There's a pattern in commercial records. Well, what is that pattern? It's understanding that. And as much as I am obsessed and like into the data and at it and the little calls, it makes things soulless. It's basically, it's like this automated Orwellian system for success. And surely there should be like a rose that grows through the concrete at some point. You know, and that's what I think all acts should aspire to. That regardless of algorithms and everything, there should be like this like shining light on something created that just completely is out the boundaries of algorithms.
But I also think then that comes back to what our perception of success is, right? And I think it's easy to say that. I think we've been in every room of your house right now, mate.
I'm trying to find the most quiet room. Gardens are over the street, so I think this room's more quiet now.
Yeah, this is good.
Back to this.
It's kind of what is success, and I think it's so easy to say success is all about how much money you earn. What is success to you? What is success to you? Honestly, without giving the artist bullshit that we all say, what is success to you?
Honestly, what it used to be, and when I came through, all I used to say to myself was, when I started making music, I said, if I could make an average income, be able to go out for dinner once a month, every 2 weeks, go on holiday once a year, start a family, maybe one day buy a house. Modest means that's success. For me now, and oddly that was more kind of it's not even financial orientated, it's just to be able to do what I love in life. I have no stress of not being able to pay bills, because I know what that feels like. And that's all I wanted, and thank God I managed to get that, but my expenses now are a lot more than I used to live with my mom. So you know, I have to pay for a lot, you know, like you can hear outside, it's gardeners.
Well, I think that's the thing that comes with earning money, right? Is that your life, you live within your means, and the more money you earn.
I'm in a world of lawyers, accountants, yeah. the system that kind of feeds off me and also obviously help me is not a, it's a two-way street. So my thing now has slightly changed, and that all I want to do is build a catalogue of music.
Yeah.
And look back on, you know, when I'm older and be happy.
Yeah.
So that's, I think those are about to cry, but I'm actually about to sneeze. So it's to make a body of music which I'm happy.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that one day my son might listen to him and not be embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and I'll say with the last album, I managed to do that. Mm. I'm working on a new album at the moment.
Amazing.
I hope. And here's the thing with albums as well, is it's as close to a day job as it can feel with music.
Yeah.
I quite like that. I do like a bit of hard work, but it's when hard work feels displaced.
Yeah.
When hard work is very kind of focused.
Yeah.
It's good, but with the nature of what we do, it's all trial and error.
Yeah.
And it always will be. So it's a lot of wasted energy in places. But that also breeds kind of refining things.
And, totally.
You know, so that's my goal now, just a catalogue of music.
I
have another, you know, my deal, you know, I need to commit to a deal I have with a record label.
Yeah.
But, you know, just make a body of music, which kind of, you know, is my legacy, and that's my goal now. But yeah, it's making, basically my whole thing is like no cheap moves, no, don't do anything tacky.
Yeah,
like, you know, I look at acts that come before me and try to learn so much from them.
Yeah,
and musically it might not necessarily be similar to what I do, but it's like, how did they do it?
Yeah.
What kept them in the game for 20 years? And it always comes back to the music.
It's never anything else. Although there's a lot of acts, especially nowadays, that have like big social media following or have done something that kind of, like, I remember, can you remember when Eats and Seth were kind of coming through and they had like an amazing social media following, and it was like very, it was very comic based, if you know what I mean. But realistically, especially for Eats and Seth, it was all about the music. It was like Seth was a fucking great DJ, and you knew that when he performed, he performed with Eats. The music always came through, and you can have things that happen outside of the music, but realistically, it always just comes back to great music. And if you don't have that foundation, it's like there's a lot of artists that are, a lot of people that are coming through being big on TikTok that have never written a record in their life and never done anything like that. And
it's almost a different industry.
Yeah.
It's an industry, but it's a different industry.
Well, it's not the music industry, because it's not about fucking making music.
It's entertainment. But at the same time, if you take the top five DJs in the world, I'd say only three or four of them. I'd say only one or two of them made the music.
Yeah. Not even that.
I know one of them does. I know for sure one of them does. But you're just saying top five DJs in the world. That's top five earning DJs in the world.
Who are they? Who are the top five?
It's going good, isn't it? One of them. And here's the reason why. Because
Calvin Harris
makes his music.
Yeah.
But the reason why is, if you're gonna go on the road, do 200 shows a year, it goes against you, your time to make music.
Yeah.
But what doesn't go against you is the perception that you've made the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you're basically a touring entity. You're a traveling salesman.
Yeah.
Like, now you're a traveling salesman, staying at home,
it's pointless.
Against that. So in order to be, if you want to be the richest DJ in the world, do not make your music.
Here we go. Chainsmokers, Marshmallow, Calvin Harris, and Steve Aoki.
Chainsmokers smell amazing.
Chainsmokers are at the top.
I think they might. Maybe I'm a bit too harsh. I think they might. Even someone like Marshmallow, I'm sure, is involved. I'm not going to start calling names on them, right? Because it's like not my place. It's like
It doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't.
But there is a culture. And here's the thing, there's a culture in electronic music at the more commercial side where I think the war's pulled over a lot of people's eyes, but they don't see the underbelly of what's it. And maybe and who cares? Like, they just want to hear good music. Who really cares if someone makes their music or doesn't? It's like, are they into a record? But it's, I don't know, it feels a little bit odd.
I think it's more so that it's within the scene, right? It's the DJs, it's the producers that care about shit like that more than the actual punters.
Exactly. It's, and it's basically, say, it's sound grapes.
It's ego. It's people's egos.
It's like, well, I make this and I do this, but someone's more successful and they don't do this. So therefore, I'm upset at them because they're making more money than I. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. It's like, it's nothing else. It's basically slightly sour. The irony is, I see it more in the considered to be the underground than I do the overground.
Totally.
Like, if people, if people knew, no one gives a shit. It's like, if people shouldn't have to know, it's just because we're part of it. You know, it's like Elon Musk running Tesla. Like, everyone thinks Elon Musk runs Tesla. Elon Musk don't do shit.
No.
Like, he's very good at delegating.
Yeah.
And he's, his big thing is his social media presence at the moment and the way he's perceived and doing quirky things. And, you know, he's almost like that celebrity type mold.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody thinks Elon Musk does everything over a Tesla. He didn't even start Tesla.
Yeah.
So it's perception management. And it exists in
everything.
In every, but like I said, I think the real bitterness from creators or anyone involved in what we do is, I want to say jealousy. It's like an unfair advantage. Mm. It's like playing Street Fighter 2 and someone's putting a cheat code and you haven't.
Yeah.
That's basically what it comes down to. It's like someone supplied the cheat code and you didn't.
Yeah.
And now you have to, be in the same arena and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically the best analogy of it.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. But no one cares, man. No one cares on a greater level of listening to music. But it is an interesting kind of thing that does exist in electronic music. But
it's very weird that it consists in electronic music, because if you're in the industry itself, everyone expects you to do absolutely everything yourself. And
it's a bit milly finilly, isn't it? Because it can only really exist in electronic music, because it can't exist in pop music.
No.
Because, I mean, it has with milly finilly, where they're not the singers, they're the face. Mm. There is a milly finilly, and by anyone who doesn't understand what I'm saying by milly finilly, just Google it. it's just rampant.
Yeah.
It feels dirty, though. It feels great, but the problem that it all sounds great and everyone should do that and not do this and just tour and don't make your music and get a team or people to do it. But there's consequences to that.
Yeah.
The consequences is you are not reliant upon your output.
Yeah.
So the stress that you have in order, who's going to do my next song, who's going to make this, who's going to make this, is it as good as this record is, blah, blah, blah. If you're living in that world, you can't control it.
Mm.
What if that producer goes, okay, you're going to give me, more than that. And it's like, this is oddly stressful world for a lot of people within that.
Well, I think this is the thing, though, that because I write music for people. And I think this is where it gets greedy. And I think people don't value the music as much as they should, because we all know certain acts that their music was written by somebody that was extreme, that made them extremely successful. And then that artist leaves using that producer and then goes use somebody else. And then that music isn't as good as what it used to be. And although they've built a foundation, their music isn't solid. But I think that's the thing that for me is, if you're making a shit ton of music, a shit ton of money because of your records that popped off, you need to fucking look after everybody that made your records. And make sure that, because a lot of it comes down to money. A lot of it does. A lot of producers go, I've made your record and now you're going to make this much money based on, and don't get me wrong, it's not all about the music, but a lot of it is about the music. I think there comes a point where you, as an artist, if you're not making your music, you have to pay dues to the people that are writing your music. Whether that's a percentage of your income, whether that's whatever, I don't know.
And that's at the detriment to the person who benefits, because if they don't have the skills, then their career is going to stop.
Yeah.
So it's at the detriment to them.
Totally.
You know, like with a lot of music, like the best music or the best things I, whether it's music or whether it's film, whether a lot of it is collaborative process. So, you know, some records I might work with a guitarist.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and it's like, all right, there's components to this.
Yeah.
But then that's different to what we were speaking about before.
Totally which is different.
Ghostwriting.
Totally different. I think,
you know, like, yeah. I thought about this the other day. And it's like, I just don't have the energy to do it. But it's not, it actually wasn't a bad idea. And that was to go on Fiverr, start an artist alias that is not my own, and just find, put a team together on Fiverr, yeah, and like make music purely for capitalist financial,
yeah,
reasons, and, you know, to create like some entity and stuff like that. It's I wouldn't wake up and be happy each day if I do that. But like I said, there's what you mentioned a second ago regarding there's two parts of the piece. There's the collaborative process and there's ghostwriting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like red light, green light. What else? A few other records, like it's the instrumental back end production is 100% me.
Yeah.
And the songwriting was with Sean and Rush, totally, and Sean Bond. Then there's other records I've done with instrumentation. So, okay, someone could do a better job than, yeah, me playing guitar. So bring them. That's part of the process. That's the, yeah, an organic thing.
Totally agree.
But then I've also seen other elements where people on record and tell everybody they made the record and they didn't.
Totally. Yeah.
So it's the double edged sword with collaborative process. Work with people you like, work with people you get on with. And if you don't get on with them, don't like them. Like the Duality album, every single on that album, every performer was so nice.
Yeah.
And just like the experience of being in the studio working with those acts on the album was just, it's pleasurable.
Yeah. It's important.
It was just like, let's make a great record, see how it goes. It wasn't like 2 years after making a record, you get messages and emails from everyone saying, so-and-so said they make all your music. So it's like, why are they doing that?
Yeah.
And if they did, why don't they make music as good as that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the other side of the beast that you're speaking about. But
I also think that's ego.
The best, yeah.
Ego is so big in this, in life. And I think if people can really... It's ego and jealousy, because what it is they see you being successful and they're not.
It's not even success. It's sometimes this is where it comes back to, like, why don't you have ghostwriters? And that's just the reason why, is that you have to have skills at a certain level to be reliant upon yourself.
Yeah.
So if the castle crumbles, who are you relying on?
Yeah.
Okay, and this is what I'm saying. Some of the top people, earning people, they have that stress.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's effectively what comes to. But at the same time, some of the best pieces of music history are an absolute collaborative process.
Yeah.
Even Quincy Jones 100% made those records for Michael Jackson. I think he made Thriller himself. No.
No.
He was a conductor.
Yeah.
It all came back to Quincy Jones. Do you think Bruce Sweden is picked because he feels he's owed more? Do you think, you know, the keyboard player from Toto feels like he's bitching? No, because they're confident in their own skin. They're a part, you know, Eddie Van Halen playing guitar on, I've forgotten what record. Freddie also, I can't remember the record. Or be it. I can't remember where he does guitar solo. Do you think he's going on social media and being like, oh, I feel like I was owed more on this and blah, 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 and it's like, I can't. No. Because they could have what they do. They don't need to do that. And it's a collaborative process. There are a lot of time. Music and film are unique to a lot of other arts, like painting and things like that. Painting is just like, can be just a very individualistic process. Hollywood and films are certainly a process of bringing in best people for the job.
Yeah.
And music, the upper echelons of music, is a collaborative process, whether that's session players, songwriters, mix engineers, mastering engineers. Like, you know, I'm even by thinking about the next album, it's like, okay, who do I want to work with on the mix, as a mix engineer level? And listen to records where, oh my God, the mix on that superb, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a professional, it's a collaborative process.
Well, that's it. It's understanding that as well. It's how do I make my music sound as good as I possibly can? And by getting somebody in that's better at something than you are, we can't all be fucking amazing at everything. There's nobody that's good at fucking everything. So let's just get the best people in.
There's a few. There's a few people that are actually like geniuses, like guitar players, electronic acts, and then mix engineers. There's a few people that are, you know, great at every element. But it's such as there's spectrums to the music making process.
Totally.
You know, someone making lo-fi guitar music, like someone like Mac DeMarco or someone like that, to stop everything, to ghostwriter, basically just says yes to a record process, and then there's everything in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
Who the fuck cares? The reality, no one cares. No, the listener doesn't care unless it's a good record.
Yeah, and that's all it comes down to.
When it comes down to, so whatever the process to make a good record is what it's about, in my opinion. But you have to become reliant upon your skill set as well.
Yeah, I agree. We just did an hour and a half as well, and I think that's kind of a perfect way to wrap that motherfucker up. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. It was I feel like we could just keep talking for hours and hours and hours.
Well, my pleasure, man. And like, if anyone's watching this that is like getting into music or struggling at the moment, or just I come from humble backgrounds. I'm not the smartest guy in the room, and there's just purely out passion and just being obsessed with and loving the process of making music. Just don't lose that, even if you're, you know, you have one day a week on a Saturday to be on your laptop making music. You know, just don't lose that energy. And like I said, you know, don't compare yourself to others as well. It's just you know, it's dangerous. If you can just carve your own door, unique, the music industry and music, the pie is so big.
Yeah.
And worldwide as well. No one's taken from you. Okay. Like, create your own your own thing, create your own club, like create your own sound, create your own unique thing that's unique to you, and it'll come back to reward you.
100%, man. Love that. Love that. How can people follow you, listen to your music, all the good shit?
Just, yeah, internet. Go on the internet.
Yes, mate. Yes. Good to speak. Good to catch up, mate. Hopefully see you. Probably see you in the new year at some point. Have a great festive period with the family as well.
We'll do. Probably see you in the US at some festival.
At some point. Probably mate.
Take care. A good look after yourself.
Peace, stay man. Safe. Keep safe. Big see love, you. Man. Bye. And that is a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Big love to Duke for coming on. Amazing, amazing podcast. Great conversation. Keep safe. See you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.